The surge in innovation, interest, and investment in artificial intelligence is powering the tech industry, especially in the San Francisco Bay Area, the epicenter of a newfangled gold rush. But Silicon Valley AI is not the only driver that's powering the market for tech talent. On this episode, we dig into CBRE's Tech Talent Report with its lead author and state-of-the-art insights from an investment executive who has deep experience in the innovation ecosystem.
This is the most significant, the largest technology waves in our lifetime, and we're still in the very, very beginning innings of it.
That's Victoria Slivkoff, the new Global Head of Investor Relations and Innovation Partnerships for Chemonix International, and someone with as long a resume as anyone who's appeared on our show. Victoria spent over two decades working in venture capital, private equity, and advisory roles. She's held positions as the Global Head of Innovation Entrepreneurship for the University of California System and on the board of NM Leap, a leadership program at the historic Los Alamos National Lab in New Mexico. Victoria is also the host and producer of a TV show called Tech Dreamers, which profiles deep tech entrepreneurs in Silicon Valley and airs overseas on Taiwan Plus, the country's premier international news and entertainment channel.
One of the big differences this time around that we see is that there has never been a time where so much capital has been allocated to actual physical infrastructure.
And that's Colin Yasukochi, Executive Director of CBRE's Tech Insights Center. Colin's the lead author of much widely read CBRE research, highlighted by the annual Scoring Tech Talent Report. Coming up, the market for tech talent and the real estate developments that are resulting from shifting demand in this ever-evolving industry. I'm Spencer Levy, and that's right now on The Weekly Take. Welcome to The Weekly Take, and we are going to revisit one of our favorite topics today, which is tech talent. And we're doing it, of course, in San Francisco, which is the epicenter of it all. And to do so, we have Victoria Slivkoff. Victoria, welcome.
Thank you, Spencer. It's a pleasure to be here.
And then we have one of my oldest friends in the business, Colin Yasukochi. Welcome, Colin.
Thanks, Spencer.
Colin, since we've had several tech talent shows, give me something that's changed.
Well, our Tech Talent Report, we're on our 13th edition. So we've been doing this report quite a long time. The last report that we did, the top thing that we found was how AI is impacting the tech talent workforce and how it's transforming it. And so the hiring that we have been seeing over the last several years has been concentrated really on two functions: software engineers with AI-related experience, and also IT professionals who are running the computer systems. Mm-hmm. A lot of companies don't have their data organized properly to be able to implement AI tools, mm-hmm. and that's become a vastly important aspect of it. And as I'm sure we've heard about before, that data centers is obviously another big thing that is being able to accept that data and to do all the AI modeling.
Mm-hmm. And the data center space is an area where a tremendous number of companies, CBRE included, is all in, where we have, we recently did an M&A acquisition for a company that does a lot of the servicing of these places, but the amount of capital there is tremendous to build new ones. The need for it is tremendous, from AI, from crypto, from video games. Tell us about how data centers are going to be impacted by AI and some of the findings of your report.
Well, I mean, AI is definitely creating the demand for these data centers, but I'll talk a little bit about venture capital funding and corporate CapEx. Mm-hmm. I think those are two things that are just off the charts for 2025. So the AI venture capital-backed companies received $200 billion worth of VC funding in 2025.
There used to be a time when $200 billion was a lot of money, but it still sounds like a lot of money to me.
It's a lot of money, and to put that into perspective, that $200 billion of VC funding just for AI companies would represent the second highest year ever for venture capital funding.
Wow.
So it's pretty phenomenal. And then you add on top of that probably about at least another $500 billion that are being spent by big corporations, mostly tech corporations, on CapEx That money's going, most of it, to AI-related activities and data centers.
So this is, let's just back up here for a second. That was $200 billion, not million. When $200 billion was spent last year alone on AI, and then there's an additional $500 billion that's coming, or that was also spent?
That was also allocated for the year. So, we're talking $700 to $1 trillion, $700 billion to $1 trillion being spent.
Mm-hmm.
It actually contributed noticeably to GDP in 2025, which is really phenomenal.
And I saw that there was a chart, I believe it was 37% of second quarter GDP, 27 to 37% in one quarter of GDP was related to AI. Quite remarkable. So, Victoria, let's turn to you now. AI is obviously the biggest story in the tech world by a lot today. What are some of the other stories? What are some of the other things you're working on in the tech area?
Yeah, so in my new role as Global Head of Investor Relations and Innovation Partnerships and Chemonix International, a little bit of background there. It is the world's leading sustainable development company. It's been around for 50 years and doing international development, economic development across 160 countries. And so really seeing the gamut of innovation from, you know, ag tech and food tech, fintech in Africa, and span the ecosystem. But personally, I'm very, very interested and been very involved in deep tech innovations. And the definition of that is innovations born out of scientific or engineering breakthroughs. So that's everything around, you know, semiconductors to fintech innovations, AI models. But really now it's looking at moving AI from the digital realm into the physical realm. You know, how can AI solve some of the world's biggest challenges, whether that is addressing a shortage of labor in our manufacturing systems and talking about, for instance, how robotics can augment the shortage of workforce to, coincidentally, the AI revolution is actually driving a new renaissance towards sustainable energy where solar and wind and now small nuclear reactors are really the hot topics, the hot investment areas.
Look, folks, AI may make us more productive. It may disrupt the labor force. They need basic stuff. They need ag tech. They need water. And how is technology helping with this stuff that is going to help literally billions of people every day?
Yeah, so it's not looking at AI as a vertical, but rather AI as a horizontal that embeds across different industries. Mm-hmm. So for instance, in ag tech and food tech, can we collect environmental data, but also generate synthetic data to help us map, you know, for instance, water sources better? Direct-to-air carbon capture, you know, how can we use AI to create better models to do that? So really when I think about AI, it is ultimately driving productivity, decreasing costs, and helping to build scalable solutions. And one of the areas that I don't invest in and I don't work in, but I'm very interested in, is the possibility of AI to cure diseases, to accelerate drug discoveries. And that is something that can just create massive impact and help to improve the lives of many. But I really believe in the power of innovation, entrepreneurship, and meaningful capital to democratize opportunities so that the benefits can be felt by many.
And I think one other thing I might add to that, Spencer, too, is where AI can make investment less risky because it's analyzing the data well in advance of things occurring. Mm-hmm. And that's similarly applicable to real estate, where you're looking at the data much more intensely going on with AI, and it's surfacing insights that help you better operate that property and better invest in that property. Like, what are the things in your building that are popular to tenants? And with data and other things, sensors, you'll be able to better identify that much more quickly and even in real time.
And I certainly hope that that's the case proactively rather than reactively. So I'm a big fan of AI, but I understand its strengths and limitations today within the real estate sector. The way that I look at it is that I think for anything that can be measured, it's fantastic, particularly property management stuff. You can measure things down to the amount of light, the amount of water, the amount of energy. But in terms of its ability to be predictive, that is the next step. And we're still not there yet. What do you think, Colin?
Well, I mean, I think when we define what AI is today, that some of those semblances have existed for quite some time. When we think about our regression models to predict the future, you know, whether it's the economy, real estate, marketing, we had those, but AI is enhancing that and making it much more sensitive and I think much more real time. So I do feel that it is on the predictive end becoming much and much more valuable and accurate.
One of the areas that has gotten a lot of talk recently as we're talking about sustainable energy is nuclear. Small nuclear reactors, particularly for these data centers, which are very water and power hungry. Any comment on nuclear as a technology that is being advanced at Los Alamos or elsewhere that might be able to help AI or other things?
I mean, you're really looking at hyperscalers to different investors looking at how do you find sustainable and scalable and also cost-effective energy sources to power data centers, to power AI factories. So I think small nuclear reactor is definitely a solution. I think there's been a lot of developments across the safety aspect of it.
By the way, Bill Gates is one of the biggest investors in small nuclear reactors.
So it's really looking at different levers that we can pull, right? Whether it be solar or small nuclear reactors, whether it's going back to wind, and also traditional energy sources as well. The power demand required to power AI is going to grow exponential. Currently, it really consumes a lot for training models, and then look at the next stage is inferencing as well. So that demand is not going to suspend, and therefore we have to look at whether small nuclear reactors and all different aspects and areas, sources of energy to continue powering that. Currently, AI consumes about 2% of the world energy consumption, and then it's going to grow to 5% by 2030. So it's really looking at, you know, providing power, but also optimizing existing infrastructure. For instance, chip design, can we make that more optimized so that it takes less energy for compute as well? I do share those concerns. You know, are we going to be providing sustainable power so that it's not impacting adversely of everyday people?
There's a lot of public-private stuff going on here. This is not just $1 trillion of private capital coming in. The president himself has had talks about bringing data centers to the United States, bringing foreign money. So it's public and private. And you spent quite a bit of time in the UC system working for Janet Napolitano, who is the former, correct me if I'm wrong, she was the head of Homeland Security as well. Tell us about that public-private kind of marriage, if you will, on how it's going to drive some of these things forward.
Yeah, I had a fantastic mandate at the UC system where I was in charge of innovation and entrepreneurship across the UC system of 10 universities, 5 of which have medical centers, now it's 6, and 3 national laboratories. So the mandate was across overseeing over 70 incubators, accelerators, 4 California statewide innovation institutes. Second was managing and monetizing the entire IP portfolio of the UC system, which is the largest IP portfolio of any university in the U.S. So really looking at innovation and technology commercialization and acceleration on that continuum. And that has to be done through public-private partnership. I'll give you an example. SBR grants, right, other public money and sources to de-risk that technology so that it is ready for private sector investors and corporates to pick it up to invest and accelerate. So it really takes the whole, you know, risk capital and also non-dilutive grants to really move innovations from the very, very beginning or early stages of the lab into commercial space. And now in the era of AI, what we're seeing is the scale and speed by which it happens.
So, Colin, the segue here is from AI to universities to talent. And I think we're sitting here in San Francisco by no coincidence. The link between universities and talent is inextricably interwoven. Talk about that and how that drives San Francisco.
We have probably the most dynamic and innovative talent in the world in San Francisco Bay Area, and that's directly linked to our top universities, predominantly UC Berkeley and Stanford, are producing some of the most innovative talent coming out of anywhere around the globe. And that is a big leading factor as to why the AI industry is really centered here. And of all the venture capital funding going to AI companies, 80% of it is going to the San Francisco Bay Area-based companies, and that's just mind-blowing.
It was 72 on last year's show, just to hold you to it. It actually went up last year?
It went up, and what's interesting is that other markets and other talent sources are also getting into the AI fray, and where we're seeing the growth. And the reason we see it here so clearly is because many of the companies are based here and they're expanding in these markets because that's where a lot of great AI talent is. So Seattle and New York in the US are probably the two top AI markets. And then if you go over to Europe, you're talking about London and Paris. And then in Asia Pacific, it's predominantly going to be India and China, the different cities within those countries. And that's really a very small segment of the talent sphere that's actually driving AI.
There's a lot of very positive things being said about AI and data centers, but there's some people who might be skeptics. And the book that I put up would be the book by Robert Gordon in 2018. The title of the book was The Rise and Fall of American Worker Productivity. We had a period from 1974 to 2018 where the average productivity growth of the average American worker did not go up. And that was a pretty significant period. That was the period of the personal computer. That was the period of the internet. That was the period of the iPhone. So walk me through why this time is different.
I think that productivity is going to rise pretty dramatically through AI. Is this time different? Well, there are a lot of similarities because we've never seen this kind of money being invested in the AI space. So whenever there is a huge amount of money invested, it raises the caution flag, right? Mm-hmm. It's like when everyone's running after the same thing, run in the other direction. I think there's going to be ups and downs. Is there going to be a bust? I think there's going to be some corrections going into the future. And that's, I think, part of the innovation cycle. That you have your ups. Not every company is going to be a winner, and there's going to be a lot of failures. But at the end of the day, we're building the type of infrastructure that's going to last many, many years to come. Because if we think about during the dot-com era, that was certainly a bubble, right? And there was a lot of investment going into the backbone of the internet. And that got overbuilt, but we benefited from that decades on. Maybe something similar like that's going to happen in AI. And I'd turn to Victoria, who has a little bit more experience in this area, to add her comments.
Sure. But before I do that, I just want to say that I'm glad I still have my pets.com rewards card, or my dog would be out of squeaky toys. Victoria, what is your point of view?
I think it's what's really different is back in the dot-com boom, you had companies that weren't really solving real issues and they weren't driving revenue, right? You probably had some sporadic adoption, but it wasn't sustained revenue. But if you look at right now, companies are being built, you know, Lovable, OpenAI. They're reaching 100 million ARs in record speed in 8 months. So
what's AR?
Annual recurring revenue.
Okay.
And hitting that revenue mark in 8 months. So what that tells me that this is backed by real adoption. It's actually driving revenue. And I absolutely agree with Colin that this is the most significant, the largest technology waves in our lifetime. And we're still in the very, very beginning innings of it. So of course, there's going to be some market corrections. But you're really looking at AI at, you know, different layers of that stack. From infrastructure, right, all the way to like models and then to applications. So I think it's really solving real issues and it's increasing productivity, and we're seeing that right now. It's very exciting.
But there is both sides of this story as it relates to capital flows. And if there's a capital winner, there might be a capital loser. And one of the sectors within our economy that has suffered recently is life sciences. And the reason why life sciences has suffered, even though it was like the next big thing after COVID, is because a lot of the VC money picked up here and went over there. So speaking more broadly about VC and talent and where it's going, Colin, how much do the capital flows matter when it comes to predicting the real estate market? Because I know from your report that VC funding is one of the metrics you use to measure the future success of a market.
It is. That's fuel for growth.
Yeah.
And that's fuel for these companies to add people, get into real estate, and sort of move forward there. But I think one of the big differences this time around that we see is that there has never been a time where so much capital has been allocated to actual physical infrastructure. And even though a company may be receiving, an AI company receiving $1 billion worth of funding, they may be spending anywhere from 50 to up to 75% of that money on AI infrastructure and the other portion of it to headcount, where in the past booms, almost all of that money was being spent on headcount. But the growth cycle is so large that we are seeing these companies hire an enormous amount of people. And in the city of San Francisco, where obviously AI is most concentrated, AI companies represented 25% of all office leasing activity in 2025, and they represented about 80% of all the net new growth. So taking additional office space, that's really being driven by AI, and that's what's really driving the turnaround in the San Francisco office market and also the housing market, because AI companies are in the office very often, and they're talking 5-6 days a week. So they're very office-centric and creating that demand for space.
Well, speaking of demand for office, it is quite a story where San Francisco, let's just call it what it is, San Francisco was disfavored big time by the institutional markets until a couple of years ago. It might still be disfavored to some degree, but wow, what a turnaround. Am I too enthusiastic?
It's a very generous characterization of being disfavored, because it was far worse than that. But now that's dramatically changed over the last, I would say, 18 months.
Yes.
That with this technology and AI growth, there's a lot of optimism that investors are coming in. They're buying these properties at 20 cents on the dollar, and they see tremendous upside potential. And it's translating into the greatest amount of investment activity that we've seen in quite some time since right before COVID. And many institutional investors are now back in the market. Mm-hmm. Predominantly, it was your private capital folks, like you mentioned, like Cyrus, who were early adopters. They saw this thing coming, and they had the risk tolerance to go in and get these properties. Now the institutional investors are coming back to the market because they see the upside. And this is all amid vacancy that's still 30% here in the city. So that's a really high number. Mm-hmm. But what is in demand is the highest quality office space. And these investors are buying low and transforming these underperforming, underimproved buildings into what the market wants.
So let's expand beyond San Francisco for just a moment, Victoria. Let's talk Los Alamos. How are you getting talent down there?
Well, you have the National Laboratories. They're just really rich with smart people, smart scientists that are doing the research and developing these technologies. Mm-hmm. And so you really think that, going back to why San Francisco is such a magical place, because you need certain ingredients to make this attractive, right? You need world-class university institutions. You need corporates to be pulling in the demand, creating demand for these innovations. And then you also need capital, right? So venture capitalists will come as well. So what you're seeing that it's coming together in Los Alamos, in New Mexico, as well as now it's becoming a center of deep tech, specifically focusing on national security tech, and there's a big ecosystem developing across quantum. And then, of course, you have venture capitalists. They're in town, but also it's attracting VC funding from Silicon Valley as well. So I think it really needs to be anchored by national laboratory, research institutions, higher ed.
I think that we're seeing that more and more, that the fluidity of talent working together across broader geographies than we're used to is something that has emerged. And I think technology has helped drive that. And what's, I think, has been interesting over the last 5, maybe 10 years is that talent is flowing to the types of employers and projects that are most interesting and engaging for them. So it's not so much that there's this great job, I'm going to do this job because it pays the most or whatever. They're very mission driven. And so people are very interested in AI and wanting to change the world and to specifically work on a sector that interests them. And it may be healthcare. It may be some other type of industry. It could be defense. Whatever it might be, that the talent flows are very, very fluid, but at the same time, they're concentrated in these megalopolises that you are talking about. And then there are some other ones that are small and highly specialized. We talked about Los Alamos, but I mean, you also have something similar in Huntsville, Alabama, mm-hmm. you know, with the aerospace rocketry and those sort of things. So there are a lot of nodes of talent across this country.
And when you talk of nodes of talent, I use one word, and that word is value creation, and continuing to move up the value chain. You want to do the highest possible value add work in your industry of choice. And so here at high tech, AI, semiconductors, That's where we're sitting right here. But fintech might be New York. It might be London. It might be Hong Kong. Aerotech might be Huntsville, Alabama. Is that the story you're trying to weave here, Colin?
Absolutely, because every particular location has a specialty. Yeah. And when we do look at talent, you look at like what is the real world experience and expertise that that particular market has. So isn't the car one of the biggest mobile devices that we have and the amount of technology that's going in there? Well, guess what? Many of the tech companies have established pretty substantial operations in Detroit because they want to get inside of your car. And that's where a lot of people spend a lot of time. Similarly, you'd mentioned New York and fintech. There are other areas like Vancouver. There's a lot of media and arts and gaming going on there. And so people who are in that space and the technology tend to go to those particular markets. There's many examples across the country. You look at how tech has transformed Hollywood, and that's only really getting started and a little bit scary with what AI can do.
And I think that's one of the key questions right now. We've been following disruption within the labor business for 150 years. This is not, you know, we didn't start the fire, to quote Billy Joel, of people being concerned about new technology disrupting them. At the same time, I think that there are people that are fearful. What do you say to them, Colin?
Well, I would say that the number one thing is embrace the new technology and adopt it, because every time a new technology has come into play, people have feared for their jobs, that their jobs are going to be replaced. And that is certainly the case for some things. But generally what it does is that it augments your job, makes you more productive. I think there was an economist that said that 60% of the jobs today are new compared to where they were 40 or 50 years ago. So the jobs of the future are going to be different jobs, but if you adopt to the AI technology, those are going to be jobs that you're going to be thriving in. And so the jury's still sort of all out, I would say, on whether AI is going to create more jobs than it destroys. It's hard to know that at this point, but I think that it's going to just make our jobs a lot different and a lot more productive.
That's exactly it. So when I look at a job, you know, what is the meaning of your job, the purpose of the job, and also what are just tasks? So where I can see AI excel is actually doing the task. I'll give an example, software engineers. The purpose of your job, the meaning of your job, is to solve problems. Now, coding is just a task of that job. So if you can have automation, if you can have AI to help you do the task aspect of it, that makes you more productive. Therefore, by definition, that makes the company more productive and more profitable, and therefore we will need to hire more software engineers to solve more problems. Now, going back to specific labor concerns, we do have a current labor shortage. As you said, aging populations, we're not growing to replace current population, maintain it. So it's really also thinking about manufacturing, automation, robotics is to augment that. And also robots and automation that can help us do the stuff in a very dangerous environment that you don't want to put humans in. So I really think, I can't even think about some jobs of tomorrow that are going to be created, but I do believe that we're going to see a transition of that process of, you know, how do we retrain the workforce to pivot them and to position them to do the jobs of tomorrow. It's more analytical. It's more working along and leveraging AI to be more productive. Going back to renewable energy boom, we did retrain workers to be solar panel installers, and that created a new sector of jobs in that renewable innovation wave. You know, back when, you know, cars were coming online, replacing the horse and buggy, you know, people were getting kind of nervous. But guess what? We created more jobs, like mechanics jobs, right? You need people to service those cars. So I really think that, I agree to Colin, that as you increase more opportunities and create more industries, there are going to be new jobs and new type of skills needed to work alongside technologies to, you know, even solve some of the world's pressing problems.
I think it was Henry Ford who said that if he had surveyed the workers on what they really want, the workers would have said, "We want a faster horse." And sometimes people don't know what they want.
When change is scary.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think AI is scary from that perspective, is that people don't really know exactly what it's going to do and how it's going to change their lives. But it is going to be transformative. And it's going to play out over, you know, a longer period of time. I mean, in the short term, there's been a tremendous amount of innovation. I mean, you just think about the things that we can do with AI, helping us do our jobs, you know, with these large language models. I mean, the way you search the internet for information has fundamentally changed. In my role, writing and drawing insights about data, AI helps tremendously with that. Fortunately, at this point, they still need me to fact check whether the AI is correct or not, but that may not be true in the future.
Well, Colin, let's dig down for just a minute about where the talent is by submarket. How are these submarkets changing because of some of the changes in technology?
Yeah, so I'll use San Francisco as an example here. So we have a relatively new submarket. And when I say new, it's probably, you know, 15, 20 years old. It's called Mission Bay. And it's right near where the San Francisco Giants play their baseball games. And also the Golden State Warriors play their NBA basketball game. That is the hottest submarket in the Bay Area by far. And what makes it such is that it has new modern buildings that really support these technology companies and what they're trying to do. And so it's very specific. And so once you get that critical mass and these very important companies that are located there, like Uber and OpenAI, it attracts other companies to the area. So this submarket is booming. It is. I mean, it's basically a suburban submarket within the confines of the city of San Francisco.
I want to just touch on one of those words, suburban. So we're here in the financial district. We're here in the beautiful Salesforce Tower, smack in the middle of the financial district within San Francisco. And this is one of the great, truly one of the great buildings in the world, frankly. But the question is, there are a lot of downtown financial districts that are suffering. And by the way, downtown financial district in San Francisco has high vacancy too, okay? What do you say to folks that are saying, I want to come to San Francisco? Why are they going to Mission Bay versus coming to the financial district?
Well, I think that Mission Bay has unique offerings in terms of the product type, the types of quality buildings, and buildings that a company can occupy entirely. And there's not a lot of that here in San Francisco. In downtown, we do have a lot of vacant space, but most of the buildings at least have some tenants in them, and they're not as prominent and new as these buildings down in Mission Bay. But at the same time, I would tell you that the CBD is much richer environment as it relates to restaurants, retail, things to do during the workday and after the workday. Mission Bay is building upon that.
What do you say to those cities out there, like a Chicago, like a Huntsville, Alabama, like a Waterloo in Canada, which makes its way to your list on the Tech Talent Report? What are they doing, and what are the cities that are not on your list? How do they do it?
It all comes down to talent and innovation infrastructure. So if you have a specialty, a prominent university that's producing the best and the brightest, and public partnerships that are working collectively with universities, with governments, to really drive innovation and to attract capital, that's what really starts to build these ecosystems. That's what San Francisco is foundationally based on.
I agree. It's all really anchor on research universities. Mm-hmm. They attract talent too, right? Mm-hmm. The university attract talents and professors and postdocs from all over the world. And in the case of San Francisco, then this rich ecosystem of opportunities make them stay, mm-hmm. and build companies and attract new people to come in. So I really believe in building, and again, I'm not saying replicating San Francisco exactly how it is, because that's not the right way to do it. It's the notion of creating innovation centers in partnership with developers, in partnership with government, in partnership with universities and private sectors, so that you can create jobs for the local economy, but also attract world-class talent to come build there.
So I'm just going to ask for our final thoughts here. I'll start with you, Colin. You've been doing this report for 13 years, and I can't say enough positive things about it, because I beg, borrow, and steal from this report every day. What's the future of this report look like? What's the future of San Francisco look like?
Well, I'm really excited about that, and I'm really excited about seeing how AI is really going to transform the workforce, how it's going to transform our lives, and I think it's going to make our lives a lot better in the future. And to see that play out, to see how the data evolves and how that changes, is what really going to keep me excited about doing this report again next year, is to trying to look at what's going on, how that's changing, and how people are adapting to these new skills and new job requirements that are out there. And those that do it are going to be the most successful.
Victoria, final thoughts.
I am a big believer of cities, metropolis. I will always never bet against San Francisco as well, because I think people have a tendency to be, you know, congregating in large cities. And also, I think I'm a big believer of the talents becoming more global with remote work, and we're able to access a global pool of talent. They're going to be pulled to where they have the most opportunities. So I'm excited about, of course, the continued growth and explosion and being in the middle of this AI revolution.
So on behalf of The Weekly Take, what a privilege to have Victoria Slivkoff, Global Head of Investor Relations and Innovation Partnerships at Chemonix. Victoria, thank you.
It's been a pleasure. It's been so much fun too. Thank you, Spencer.
Thank you for coming. And then my old friend, Colin Yasukochi, Executive Director, Tech Insights Center, CBRE, primary author of both the Tech Talent and Tech 30 report, and so many other things. Great to see you as always, Colin.
So great to have been with you, Spencer.
For more on the tech talent scene, CBRE's most recent Scoring Tech Talent report is available at the CBRE Insights page. We'll also post a link to it on our website, cbre.com/theweeklytake. You can also take a deeper dive into the topic via the archive on our website and all our podcast platforms. Recent highlight episodes include a conversation devoted specifically and in great detail to the uses and growth of AI in commercial real estate, as well as Bay Area stories such as the Bishop Ranch mixed-use development in nearby San Ramon and a range of interesting things going on there, in addition to other places around the country where tech is a driving force. We'll be back to begin a run of episodes that reveal some relatively unheralded but really informative stuff from off the beaten path, including a look at Portugal's capital city of Lisbon, and one topic that might surprise you, the story of parking lots. We've got plenty of spots reserved and look forward to seeing all of you again soon. In the meantime, share this episode and spread the word. Thanks for joining us. I'm Spencer Levy. Be smart, be safe, be well.